Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Yud Bet of Sefer Melachim Aleph. And this is quite an active chapter. Shlomo HaMelech just passed away in yesterday's chapter. And now we're going to see the result of that event. Pasuk Aleph, Vayelech Rechavam Shechem, Ki Shechem Bachol Yisrael Lamlichoto. He goes to Shechem, because it's in Shechem that the Jewish people are gathered. Presumably, and by presumably, I think we mean that everybody was presuming it at that point. Presumably, to crown him, to make him king, to coronate him. Doesn't quite go that way. So he comes to Shechem for them to crown him. He's in Egypt, having fled Shlomo HaMelech. And he hears that Shlomo has passed away. He's living in Mitzrayim. So they send a call for him, because after all, Shlomo HaMelech has died. Now that issue of sending the call for him, the Radak thinks that it's because the prophecy of Achiah HaShiloni had become known by that point. That it had become known that a prophet had designated Yeravam as somebody who was going to become the ruler of the Jewish people following the demise of Shlomo. That's, I think, a daring interpretation. You could easily also have just said that the interpretation was that they called for him because he was a leader of the Jewish people. He was a leader. That's why that would be part of the reason that Achiah would have chosen, that Hashem would have chosen him. And you could easily have just gone that far with it. In any case, they call for him. So he comes, and they make him their spokesperson in the upcoming interaction. So they come to Rechavam, and they say to him, Avicha hiksha et uleinu. Your father made a heavy burden on us, or hardened the burden, the yoke on us. V'ata, and you, ata now hakel me'avodat avicha kasha. If you relax, please relax, the hard work we're doing for your father, ume'olu hakaved, and his tremendous burden, shenatan aleinu v'na'avdeka, and that he put upon us, and then we will serve you. So at least the outward agenda of this approach is that Shlomo HaMelech's rule, at least by the end, had eroded or corroded, but there were gaps, there were flaws breaking through in terms of the people's ability or their comfort with serving him. So they say to Rechavam, lessen the load and then we'll serve you. So Vayomer Alehem Lechu Ot Shloshei Yamim Veshuvu Elai Vayechuam. He says, give me 3 days to think about it, and they go. That's an odd thing. I think it's an odd thing. I mean, we can imagine it happening today. It's not odd as in unthinkable, but odd as in he doesn't have the answer, and he doesn't pretend to have the answer. He doesn't have an instinct on it, and they're fine with that. Right? They don't expect from him, they should already know what his plans are for how to rule them. So they make a request, so he seeks advice. Pasuk Vav, Vayiva'atz HaMelech Rechavam Et hazekenim asher omdim et pnei Shlomo aviv b'yoto chai lemor eich atem noatzim lashiv al hamaze davar. He turned to the elders who would stand before Shlomo his father in that day, and he asked them for their advice. He says, what do you think we should do? So they say, v'yedabru elav lemor im hayom tiye eved l'am hazeh v'avadtam v'anitam. So they say, here's the way it goes. If you're willing to give in now, if you act towards them as if you're the servant, meaning you are willing to concede to them their claims, you will rule them forever. So that's a very wise way of picturing it. Even though Rechavam is the king, even though they are supposed to serve him, even though Deva Hashem had theoretically given the Muluchat David HaMelech, nonetheless they say, you know what, yield a bit, and by yielding a bit, you'll gain greater rule. This pasuk is used, interestingly, in the Gemara in Horiot, where there are these two rabbis whose powers are remarkable, whose insight, whose intellects are remarkable, and they are called by, by the leading rabbi of the generation to come and join him, and he figured by giving them a job of sorts, they will be able to eat. They were very poor, they'll be able to eat, they'll be able to do whatever, and they don't come. So he says to them again, and then they come, and then he says to them, you think, meaning he knows why they didn't come, he says, you didn't come because you think I'm offering you a job of power. But the truth is that when it comes to the Jewish people, there is no such thing as a job of power. Every job that seems to have power is actually a job of servitude to the Jewish people, and he points to this pasuk in claiming that. So that is a Gemara in Horiyot, beginning on Yud Amud Aleph. Beginning of Yud Amud Aleph, telling the story of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. They have an interaction, and then there's these two others, Rabbi Elazar Chisma and Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada, who were the ones who Rabbi Gamliel calls them, and they don't come, and then he says to them, it's not authority, it's really servitude, which is particularly interesting because Rabbi Gamliel is thought of as being the example of powerful authority in the Jewish people. He's the one who tries to exert peremptory authority over the Jewish people, and yet we see him here having a realistic appreciation of exactly the limits on his power that he can reasonably expect. So that's what the elders say to him. Rechavam, who's not so young, right? He's we're going to find out later that he's 41 when he takes over the kingship. So he leaves the advice of the elders that they had given him, and now he consults with the Yiladim Ashigadlu Ito, the young ones. So they're young in comparison to the other people who have been mentioned, but they're not inherently young. It's not like he went and he looked for unseasoned advisors and preferred them. It's more a question of that he left the council of those you might reasonably have expected to give him the better advice. So he leaves their advice, and he goes and he finds out from his friends who grew up with him. These are the people who he is comfortable with, and he finds out what they think about what he should do. So he says to them, This is what should we do? What do you advise? What should we answer to these people who have said to me, reduce the yoke that your father gave on us? So they say to him, the Yiladim, that's the way the pasuk refers to them, these young ones who have grown up with him, they say, this is what you should say to the people, who, and then they quote the people have said to you, relax the burden of your father. So you should say to them, my pinky is thicker than my father's thighs. That's a phrase that appears in Chazal and in Jewish literature in general after that to mean somebody who is easily stronger or better or wiser than somebody else, to say kotno avem mimotnav, his small is thicker, meaning stronger, better than his thickest part, the thighs. That's what they're suggesting that Rechavam say here. Pasuk Yud Aleph, v'ata avi hamis alechem ol kaved. The father had a heavy burden. I'm going to add to it. Avi yisar alechem bashotim. He would chastise you with whips. And I'll do it with scorpions who are worse. So, the psukim are going to suggest that this was all from Hashem, and that there was a certain amount of loss of free will here. So it's not like Rechavam is choosing fully with free will, and therefore we wouldn't evaluate his choices quite the same as we evaluate other people's choices. But I wonder as I read it, or I notice as I read it, that the elders who have served in the previous administration seem to be comfortable saying, this is unfinished business that we have to sort of get rid of. We cannot continue life the way it has been until now. We can't just simply continue taking taxes, making things bad for them, and therefore it's time to concede a little bit. And the younger ones, and the emphasis is on the younger ones, who grew up with Rechavam, feel the need to have an expression of authority here. So, again, without denying the role that Hashem plays in these events, I just wonder whether it might also be a contrast between those who are secure in their power, who understand the realities of power, and therefore understand when and where to step back, as opposed to now the ones who've grown up with Rechavam and therefore have been waiting around. If Rechavam is 41 and they grew up with him, so if they're in their late 30s, they've been waiting to get into power for a while. That's all they've been doing, basically. And now when the time comes to have power, they say, oh, we have to show our power. So that might be the error that's going on here, that they are insecure in their use of power, and those who are insecure in power feel the need to express all that much more than those who are secure in it. So, they come back after on the third day. He answers the people harshly, leaving the council of the elders. And he speaks according to the counsel of the younger advisors. He parrots it exactly. And he doesn't listen to the people. He doesn't hear them. You know, I don't want to draw too many parallels to our days, to the younger President Bush, the older President Bush, to any of those kinds of issues, but it's striking to watch that the Psukim are telling us that what was going on here for Rechavam is that he is a little bit tone deaf here. He's not listening to the people. He's not understanding the opportunities and the possibilities that are embedded into what's going on. If he had listened to the people, he would have heard that there was not a need to express authority here. It wasn't a rebellion against authority. It was a complaint about financial stress. And if he had responded to it that way, it might have gone differently. But he doesn't. Now, the Pasuk adds that when he doesn't listen to them, that it was coming from God, this is in the name of fulfilling what Achiyah HaShiloni had promised Yeravam. So if that's true, then the comments we make about Rechavam have to be adjusted accordingly, because it's not Rechavam doing it on his own, it's Hashem stepping in. But that element of it is certainly there. So what happens? He gives them this speech. They see that he's not listening to them. So they say, fine. If that's your answer, what do we need you for? If that's your answer, then we don't need a king. We don't need you. We don't need a king. Everybody go home. We'll take our, you know, we'll take our ball and we'll leave. And that's what they do. And so they all go home. So the people of Judah, of Judea, people right around Yerushalayim and its areas, so they stay with Rechavam, and Rechavam rules over them. A little bit of a strange pasuk. Rechavam sends Adoram, who is the tax collector, to the north, but apparently he's there with them. Almost as if it seems like Rechavam hears them say this speech. He doesn't really believe that it could be true. So he continues on as if nothing had changed. And he sends the tax collector around. The people have told him, we don't care about you. We don't need you. We're not going to be serving you. And he keeps going as if nothing had changed, as if nothing had happened. That seems to be what's going on. So Adoram loses his life because of this. And Rechavam has to struggle to get back onto the chariot to flee to Jerusalem. And that's what happened. There you have the split. There you have the chasm. There you have the breakup of the two kingdoms. Of the two kingdoms, you have the breakup. And it seems like it's Hashem doing it. Although Rechavam's lack of ability to understand what's going on plays a role. That may have come directly from Hashem. So when they hear that Yeravam is back, so it's not clear what we mean by this, because he was back for the discussion with Rechavam, but it could be that not everybody heard about it. When they hear about it, so they make him the king over them. And only Shevet Yehuda and Benjamin, as we've spoken about, stay with Rechavam. So after this incident with the tax collecting and realizing that they're actually in full revolt, so he comes to Yerushalayim. Vayakil et kol Beit Yehuda ve'et Shevet Binyamin. He gathers Yehuda and Binyamin. Me'ash Munim Elef Bachur Osim Belchama, 180,000 select chosen men warriors. Because when you have a civil war, your first instinct is you'll just fight to put it back together, as we know from this country, from the United States of America. Now we meet a new Isha Elohim. We only meet him briefly here. He doesn't appear very much, but Hashem comes to this Isha Elohim, this Shemaya, and he tells him, "Memorial Rechavam ben Shlomo Melech Yehuda." Say to Rechavam and to all of the Jews, all of the Yehudim, and all of the tribe of Binyamin, and the rest of the people. He says, don't go fight with your brethren in the northern kingdom. Go home, because this comes from me. So they listen, and they go home, and they don't continue as Hashem had commanded them not to. This pasuk and this incident gets at some of the troubling issues of the book of Malachim as a whole. Shlomo, at the end of his life, we are told, had allowed idol worship, had either allowed idol worship, he had been involved in idol worship, but certainly allowed idol worship in the land, and you might think, therefore, that that would minimize their belief in God. That's one issue to recognize, is that it doesn't seem to be true. That all throughout the book of Malachim, whatever occurs in terms of idol worship doesn't seem to affect belief in God. That's not good, meaning it's not okay to believe in many gods. What we're talking about here is not a debate about whether to serve God or whether to serve whoever it is. It is the continuing failed attempt to eradicate paganism. And that's the challenge. The challenge is, do I believe in many gods or in one God? But that the Jews believe in God is very clear. So here too, Rechavam, who after all has just failed to keep the kingdom together by virtue of Hashem doing that to him, Hashem wanting that to happen. So Rechavam has sent a message to desist from a war where he apparently believed that he would win and he would get his kingdom back. And he does so, and he follows God's directions. Just worth watching and noticing. Because in other areas, we'll find he and other kings who do not listen to God's directives. And yet, on this, they listen to God's directives. So now, will show us the other side. We will spend some time in Melachim, focusing on the on the Yisrael side, on the northern kingdom side of this story, because the northern kingdom, for all that it had potential, and it was told of its potential to succeed and to make some kind of a lasting legacy, will fail at that, and it starts right at the beginning with Yeravam. Vayivan Yeravam in Shechem Ba'arifayim Ve'ishim Ba'ah. He builds up Shechem, and he lives there. And then he builds up Penuel. Again, this instinct for building that we've noticed in kings of the Jewish people. That was a mark of success, a mark of strong rule, I suppose. Yeravam says to himself, you know, this isn't good. If I just continue as if nothing is different, if I just let life continue, then the kingship will necessarily go back to Yehuda, to the kings of Judea. Why does he think that? So the Gemara suggests that it had to do with the next pasuk, with the fears of Aliyah LaRegel. That Yeravam is afraid of Aliyah LaRegel because, so we'll see what he says in Chav Zayin. In Chav Zayin he says, "Im ya'alecha am hazeh lasot zvachim v'et Hashem Yerushalayim," they go to Yerushalayim to offer zvachim in Yerushalayim, their hearts will return to their master, El Rechavam Melech Yehuda, to Rechavam, the king of Judah, the Haraguni, and they'll kill me. Veshavu El Rechavam Melech Yehuda, and they will kill me, and they will return to Rechavam, the king of Judea. So it's not clear what's bothering Rechavam here. Meaning, he had been promised by a Navi that he would have success. Now that kind of a promise by a Navi, you would think, or I would think anyway, would lead to a certain amount of a sense of security, a sense of that I can be confident that my future, at least to some extent, has already been guaranteed. Right? Yeravam had been promised that if only he were to keep to the rules of God, as it were, to the things that God says about how you're supposed to act and how you have to act, then he would be fine. And yet here he doesn't think so. So Chazal think that what he said to himself was, not only if they go to Yerushalayim, they offer Korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash, but that they'll see there Rechavam in the Beit HaMikdash. And Rechavam in the Beit HaMikdash had a rule that nobody else had. The rule is that Malchei Beit David are allowed to sit in the Beit HaMikdash. And the fact that they're allowed to sit in the Azara, not in the Beit HaMikdash itself, in the Azara, in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash, that will lead the people to realize that Rechavam is the true king of the Jewish people. Once they realize that Rechavam is the true king of the Jewish people, they will return to Rechavam and many things and kill me. Right? So the questions we want to wonder about are, was he right? Was he wrong? Presumably he was wrong because he'd been promised by Achiah Shiloni that if only he did right and well and he acted properly, he would be guaranteed a certain level of security. So he doesn't trust that prophecy, and that leads him to take actions that are extraordinarily damaging. Why doesn't he believe in the prophecy? We're not told. And this comes to that old question of, I pointed out, Rechavam believed in God. Yeravam apparently believed in God somewhat, because when he heard it from Achiah, he follows the advice that Achiah gives him. He runs to Mitzrayim the whole time that Shlomo was alive. Then when Shlomo dies, he comes back, and he leads the rebellion, and he takes over. And yet he's not secure. He doesn't feel like he's going to have that power. So what does he do? So he takes counsel from his advisors and he makes two golden calves. And he says to his people, Rav lacha me'alot Yerushalayim, hine Elohecha Yisrael asher elucha me'ar titrayim. So not only is the reference to the Egel HaZahav, if in case it's not clear enough for us, he says to the people exactly what we say the Erev Rav said, what the Pesukim tell us, was said when the Egel happened in the desert, when Moshe Rabbeinu was up on Har Sinai, and he comes down too late, and so Aaron throws gold into a fire, and an Egel comes out in some way. So all of a sudden, the Pesuk there tells us, Eilev, they said, Eilev Elohecha Yisrael Sheluch Meretzayim. And here, Yeravam said the exact same thing. And the Gemara understands that Yeravam was conscious of what he was doing. Right, the Gemara? The Radak assumes that he was conscious of what he's doing. And he did Agalim because he says, okay, when Aaron did it, it was wrong, and it was a mistake, but that's because Moshe was still alive. But what you see is that when the time comes that you need some kind of leadership other than the Beit HaMikdash, or other than Moshe Rabbeinu, that the way to do it is through an Egel, and the Egel is the way to do it. So it's kind of perverse, meaning he's ignoring Achiah's prophecy. He's doing what Hashem doesn't want him to do. He's setting up a competing worship, place of worship, form of item of worship, which is like Avodah Zarah already. It's an item of worship. He's going to set up a competing place of worship. So Pasuk Chavtet Vayasim, and Achad beVeit El veAchad Achad Natan beDani. But it's one in Beit El and one in Dan, which is all the way in the north, right? And it's terrible because in Pasuk Lamed Vayeh Davar Hazeh Lechatat Vayechu Al Lifnei HaEchad Adan, they go all the way to Dan to worship this. Now they're worshiping the God who took them out of Egypt, so it's not idol worship. I mean, it may qualify as a Avodah Zarah halachically in terms of bowing down to an item, but they think they're doing it b'shem Hashem, and they're the words that he says to them are, this is your God. This is instead of going to the Beit HaMikdash. It's not here's a better God than the Beit HaMikdash. It's here's the God of the Beit HaMikdash. I've managed to find a way to have the God of the Beit HaMikdash come directly to us here, and therefore we don't have to go to the Beit HaMikdash anymore. So it's weird because he's taking a form that was rejected in the Torah, the Egel. It was, in fact, the example of the worst, one of the worst failures of the Jewish people in the desert. And he's turning it into the basis of this competing worship that he's setting up, even though his kingship comes to him by virtue of a prophecy from God. Very strange. So now, once he's already setting up these worships, so he sets up places for this to be worshipped, Bamot and high worship, and he sets up Kohanim who are not from the tribe of Levi. So there's another striking at the system that God had set up, the system of how to worship Hashem. So he's striking at it directly now because he's setting up Misharatim, servants of God, other than B'nai Levi. It gets worse and worse. He makes a holiday on the 8th month, on the 15th of the month. We should note it. We're supposed to notice. This is a month later than Sukkot. Same day of the month, but a month later. Like the holiday in Yehuda, Vayalam is Beach, and Yom made offerings on the altar. He did it in Beitel to make offerings to the calves that he had made, he made priests or servants to these worships in the places of worship that he had made. So Yerubam is now setting up a whole new religion. So first of all, that sort of helps or reminds us of the slippery slope aspect of sin. Start off with a worry about his personal safety that he thinks stems from the fact that the Jews will go to the Beit HaMikdash, will see that Rechavam is worshipped there as the leader of the Jewish people, that will lead them, the people, to recognize their error of their ways. They will then, therefore, kill Yeravam. And out of that fear, he tries to find a way to avert their going to the Beit HaMikdash. Understandable. Wrong, but understandable until this point. From there, however, once he tries to avert it, he sets up counter-worships. Once he sets up counter-worships, he also sets up counter-holidays, and then counter-priests. So this, as they say, is getting worse and worse. It's going further and further into this counter-religion. The Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayal HaMizbech Asher Asa B'Veitel Chamishas Hayom B'Chodesh Shmini B'Chodesh Asher Bada Milibo. In the month that he made up on his own. There is no holiday in the Torah in the eighth month. There is no holiday of semi-Sukkot, right, of Sukkot Sheni. And yet, he makes it up. He does it on his own. And that is part of, or that is a lot of, what he's being blamed for, what he gets vilified for by Tanakh. He sets up a whole new religion on his own, starting with the whole issue and the whole worry about the people going back to Yerushalayim. So this is where the perek ends, and we'll see the sort of extents of Yeravam's life and what happens with it in upcoming prakim, but it's a striking lesson all by itself, that Yeravam comes out of having been told exactly what would happen, and it coming true, being accurate, an accurate prediction of what would happen, and that's not good enough to help him avoid, to help him prevent his falling into the trap of deciding that he knows better and well enough how to set up his kingdom in a safe way, and therefore doing things that divide the Jewish people even more than HaKadosh Baruch Hu had determined they needed to be divided. And I think it's for that reason that Yeravam becomes the model of evil. You know, and Pirkei Avot wants to point to somebody who was terrible and who chata vechtir rabim, who sinned and caused the masses to sin. So this is where Yeravam gets his hold on being considered evil throughout eternity. I think it comes from right here, from his insistence on doing these things, from his mistaken venture into these areas. This is where Yeravam messes himself up for all of eternity. So that's the end of Perek Yud Bet. Tomorrow, God willing, we'll see Perek Yud Gimel.